Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wounded Warrior Project is working to foster the most successful generation of veterans in our nation's history. One of the ways they do that is through adaptive sports. Veterans are some of the most resilient people on the planet. It's not about what you can't do after experiencing injury or illness. It's about tapping into what you can do. Learn more about how Wounded Warrior Project's adaptive sports programs are changing lives at www.woundedwarriorproject.org/sports.
This show is brought to you by K Jewelers. Listen up, NFL fans. K just dropped a collection of officially licensed NFL jewelry. Shop your favorite team in the True Fans Fine Jewelry Collection at k.com/truefans. Gear up for the season and celebrate the love of the game with K.
Buffalo Nerd Sports Podcast, where we talk history of the game, numbers and stats. And each week we highlight a charity that's doing good. If you haven't subscribed yet, then you should. Because I'm the real deal. And you know I gotta shout out the Buffalo Bills. Turn it up to the max, sit back and relax. This the Buffalo Nerd Sports Podcast. Let's go!
And what is up, Nerd Mafia? And welcome in to another episode of the Buffalo Nerd. I'm stoked that you guys are here because it's going to be an excellent show. I got a phenomenal guest for you today, and we're going to be talking to one of the OGs of the fantasy world. Mr. Jeff Hasley is joining me today. We're going to be getting into fantasy, obviously. You know, why wouldn't when we got a pro? You got to talk fantasy, but we're also going to get into some Carolina Panthers because Jeff's a Panthers fan. And, you know, of course, we're going to finish out with the greatest team in the land, the Buffalo Bills, right? That because we have to. That's just how this thing goes. It's my show. So yeah, anyways, thanks for being here, everybody. Jeff, thanks for taking your time and coming and hanging out with us. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Oh, wow. Let's see. Thanks for having me on, Colt. I appreciate it. Looking forward to this, as always. You can find my work at footballguys.com. I've worked with Football Guys since 2007, so it's been a while. I do articles there, of course. In the off season, I do lots of rankings, you name it, all kinds of rankings, standard, PPR, rookie, IDP, all of that, dynasty. Right now I'm kind of putting all that stuff together. We do a lot of collaborative pieces as well with the staff, where we might be talking about your value plays at each position, your overvalued players, who are your deep sleepers, who would you pick as the third pick in the draft if the first two are this, right? We just kind of do like a little bit of a roundtable discussion and a collaborative piece, and those are a lot of fun. So I'm doing all of those. I've got a podcast that I have called Carolina Fandom, which is all about the fans of Carolina sports, and that includes the Panthers, that includes the Charlotte Hornets, and coming up in 2022, the Charlotte FC soccer team, the first MLS team in Charlotte. So. Cool. I do that as well. So, absolutely. Check me out there. And, of course, on Twitter, at Jeff Hasley.
Excellent. So, you said you've been there since 07. When did Football Guys officially start?
Oh, man. They were like 98, 99 or something like that. I was part of the, the first wave maybe of original staffers that are there. I was a big part of Football Guys before I was hired as a staff member, just kind of helping out and assisting and enjoying my time on the message board, because that's what people did before Twitter, right? Message boards were where it was at. So I did that, and I kind of developed a little bit of a following there, and I was thankful and lucky to have at least impressed David Dodds, one half of ownership of Football Guys, and he was the one who invited me on to be a staff member, and the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, that's very cool. And that's right. It was like a forum to start, basically, right? I mean, it's basically kind of what it was, right?
Yeah, that it started off, what is it, as like cheatsheets.net, something like that, you know, and then it kind of grew from there. There was rankings, and the message boards were a really huge piece of Football Guys back then, and they still are, but not to the extent that they used to be. But yeah, that was how it was back then.
Yeah, very cool. So he definitely knows a lot about football, right? He's been covering it for a long time, pays attention to a lot of it. We're going to get into all of that, but like we like to do every week on The Nerd, is we're going to start out by highlighting a charity. And of course, Jeff got to choose who we were going to highlight this week, and it's a really cool, and when you told me what it was, and I started taking a look at it, and it's really awesome. I mean, I have, you know, my son has cerebral palsy, so it hit home for me, but why don't you tell everybody what you chose, Jeff?
So, yeah, my charity is towards Miracle Park, which is a park that's being built in my hometown of Rock Hill, South Carolina. It's been sponsored and partnered through the Carolina Panthers, as well as David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers. So that alone got me interested. But the park itself is it's geared for people of all ages and abilities. And, you know, that includes, well, everybody, right? So mm-hmm. it's an opportunity for people who may have a disability who can go and still enjoy their time either with themselves, with other family members, friends, whatever. And to see that, you know, kind of come to fruition in my hometown, and knowing that the Panthers are a big part of that, plus my employer is also a sponsor for that. You know, that was just something that I really wanted to know more about and learn and be a part of if I could.
Yeah, I mean, it's very cool. And, you know, when it's all part of like it's surrounded like around the Miracle League, right? Is kind of like one of the things that oversees it. So there's like fields and things like that that are part of the park, and there are baseball fields that are specifically made for wheelchairs and things of that nature, right? So it's rubber turf, it's all types of things. So if people fall, they don't get hurt, and it's easier to maneuver, you know, if you need a walker, if you're in a wheelchair, all those kinds of things. And they get these kids out there playing baseball, which is awesome, right? You know, so this park thing is very cool. You could still donate. It looks like they're getting very close in the fundraising. You know, it looks like there's like a million plus to go, but you know, they're raising money still, and they can use the support for the one there in Rock Hill. And you know, you can also go and check out the Miracle League too, and there's 240 organizations, I think it says, you know, worldwide. So you might even have one in your backyard. I know there's one, you know, here in California, and you know, other locations. So it's a very cool organization. Like we always do, you know, you'll be able to find all the show notes. We'll have everything in there, how you guys can link up with them, you know, click right over and find ways to donate, find more about it, you know, on all that kind of stuff. Anything else you want to mention about it, Jeff?
Just that, you know, it's like 2 miles from my house, so it's really close by. Definitely a welcomed addition to the city of Rock Hill and to the community, to the town here. It's just another example of what they're doing. We know that the Carolina Panthers are building a practice facility in Rock Hill that's already underway. That's going to be huge. I think it's going to be more than just a practice facility. I think they'll have their training camps there. And now that David Tepper owns the Charlotte MLS team, probably some practice fields there as well. And perhaps, you know, some tournaments there. Who knows what? But again, that's also going to be a really big piece of Rock Hill. And I'm glad to see it be constructed. And I can't wait to see what it's going to look like and how that's going to affect the community.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's all things that are going to bring the community together, right? You'd imagine, which is exactly what you want. So that's very cool. So should we head into some football stuff? I think I want to pick the brain of the fantasy guy. I got a couple questions about that kind of stuff. So you've been around in the industry since 07. So I kind of wanted to know if there's like one thing that really sticks out to you, like you've really seen like the change the most in the fantasy landscape, or just like something you're like, wow, I didn't really see that coming, or, you know, anything along those lines.
I would say like the biggest thing would be just the addition of DFS. I mean, that talk about a huge boost to the fantasy industry. And, you know, just that's not really something that I do a lot of anymore. I kind of used to, but that's kind of gotten watered down, in my opinion, and it's not necessarily my go-to interest. But the DFS addition to fantasy sports has been huge. If I don't say that, then maybe I guess. I mean, shoot, I remember when like the standard was you know, non-PPR, right? And then PPR kind of came into play, and now Superflex is like the big thing. So I would say those three or four things is probably the biggest change that I've experienced in terms of the fantasy industry and you know, just seeing things evolve as I have been a part of it.
It's funny, right? Because fantasy leagues are so hard to win already, and then we just keep making them more difficult by like adding all these different aspects to it, where now you have to, it's two quarterbacks. Now it's super flex where you can use whoever you want. And it's like, holy crap. Now I'm still trying to figure out the first way, you know, and now yeah. We're doing all these other ways. But absolutely, as far as the fantasy industry goes, it's incredible, right? I mean, the more that it keeps coming out, you're seeing more and more things pop up. Underdog fantasy, like all these things are popping up that are just like so many different ways to consume football and have fun with it, and, you know, and do that. So it's very cool. So I wanted to touch base with you a little bit because I've had quite a few of the football guys on lately, actually. So I've been getting everybody's strategies, you know, like kind of picking everybody's brain a little bit about how they approach things. So when you're going into like a redraft, is that kind of your go-to, or are you more of a dynasty guy?
No, actually, I'm probably more of a redraft guy. I do dynasty, but a redraft I prefer a little bit more because you're always drafting a new team. And you can always, you know, if one thing doesn't work one year, and let's try it again the next year, right? And not have to necessarily start over. And I don't want to have like multiple dynasty teams or startups that I'm doing and then have to manage them all, right? So right. I like the redraft where I can just, you know, have a league, do it, participate, do the in-season management and end it and then start it over again. I like that. So I would say right. Redraft is probably more my go-to than dynasty, but I do it all.
Cool. And so with that being said, what do you have like a main take? Like what's Jeff Hasley's approach to a redraft?
I mean, a lot of it depends on where my draft slot is, right? But for whether it's I'm the first pick or the sixth pick, or the 12th pick, right? My strategy usually is to have a balanced team and a balanced draft. When I say that, I mean like the first five picks. You know, I've got like running back, wide receiver, and tight end, right? And I'll wait on quarterback. Now, if I can get a great stud tight end early on, I will try for that, right? But if not, that's okay. And you know, I just kind of will adjust my strategy from there. But I tend to have a balanced team, and every now and then I'll have a running back, wide receiver, tight end, and you know, and maybe another running back or something as my first four picks, right? So I don't usually tend to do like a zero running back strategy or a zero wide receiver strategy. I tend to keep it balanced, and that seems to work out for me.
Yeah, I think running backs are so important that I tend to, you know, try to load up on them in the first couple rounds, obviously, if I can, especially in a redraft. I mean, I feel like guys are get hurt so often that it's you get the bell cows that you can get, and then you just hope that they can stay up for the whole season, right? So do you ever, like, what's the earliest you would take a quarterback in redraft?
I would take like Patrick Mahomes in the fourth round if he were there, and if the opportunity okay. just presented itself, that or Josh Allen slightly thereafter, I would entertain that. You know, I don't know if you remember the year when Peyton Manning had 55 touchdowns, and the year after everyone's thinking, oh, let's take him in the first round. That wasn't me. I know a lot of people wanted to do that. He wound up getting 39 touchdowns that next year, but I tend to wait on my quarterbacks unless there's just one that I can't pass up in the fourth round. And I don't necessarily particularly like the other options at the other positions at that pick. I will generally wait. Let's just say I get Tyreek Hill in the end of the first round or beginning of the second round, then I might really take a stretch and try to get Mahomes and get that Hill-Mahomes stack. That's a possibility too as well. So, I mean, it depends. I mean, I can't really necessarily go into a draft knowing this is what I'm going to do. It just kind of unfolds as the draft goes on.
Do you, when you were just talking about the stack there, would you only do that if you, because I mean, that's a pretty hefty stack you'd have to go after, right? I mean, you're doing that one pretty early. Do you have any stacks that you like in the later rounds?
Later round stack. I guess maybe, it would have to be like some sort of probably a wide receiver, not a tight end. Let me think who it might be. Maybe like a Stafford, Robert Woods, or a Stafford, Cooper Kupp, something like that. Right, where the offense, you know, the offense is going to be pretty good. And you can get a quarterback and a lesser wide receiver for that. Might do that. Or like a Tom Brady and later round, you know, Antonio Brown. That's a possibility, right? So there's a few. I'm not necessarily loving that. I do love Antonio Brown's value late. But you also have to feel that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are also going to be a big part of that offense. So it's not like he's monopolizing touchdowns. I'll tend to go right with a receiver who might be like a wide receiver too. Let's throw in Gabe Davis here in this format, right? Let's say you have Josh Allen and you know you missed out on Diggs. Well, maybe you like Davis, or you know something like that. Ryan Tannehill and Julio Jones. I don't really have a specific late round stack that I'm targeting. Most of the time, I'm targeting a top elite upper echelon type of stack if I'm going to do it that way. Otherwise, it might just be, well, who's my quarterback? And let me see if I can target a receiver who might be affiliated, you know? So Russell Gage and Matt Ryan. I mean, that's not great, but that's not bad. It just depends.
I like it. So it sounds like you pretty much are just, you like to be fluid in all of your drafts of what you're doing, pretty much.
You kind of have to. You kind of have to. I mean, there's certain aspects of strategy where I am going to target Travis Kelce in the first round, no matter what, right? Maybe the format suggests that tight end is a better pick there. You know, Darren Waller that I might target as well. So, I mean, and Derek Carr. That's actually a really interesting stack if you can get it, I think. But, I mean, we haven't really seen a whole lot of touchdowns from Waller to really kind of cement that as a true stack. I'm always looking for touchdown scorers in my stacks rather than yardage. But
gotcha.
You know, I just try to kind of play it by ear and just kind of take the draft what's given to me and, you know, have a little bit of, you know, some players that I'm kind of targeting later that I could potentially get at a value spot. But other than that, I just kind of, I'm very fluid when it comes to the draft and not necessarily stay with one particular strategy.
If there's one guy that I could say, hey, you can have this one guy at the draft spot that you want him out, who is it?
Well, if I can get Calvin Ridley in the third round, I will definitely do that. It'd have to be like early third because chances are he's going to be gone in the second. And now more and more people are starting to gravitate to Ridley. But I think that Calvin Ridley could be the wide receiver one this year, you know, the top wide receiver. So wrote an article in Football Guys about Calvin Ridley and how I think he could be the number one wide receiver. You know, so I'm kind of standing by that. So Ridley would be my most targeted player if I can get him.
Okay. So let me ask you one other thing in the fantasy land. What's one thing you would tell people to not do when they're drafting?
I would say never draft a quarterback and a tight end early. One is okay, right? You can draft a quarterback early if you want to, and you can draft a tight end early if you want to, but don't do both. Don't do both. I mean, I've done that before, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't like this team at all, right? Because unless you have a running back or wide receiver later on that you absolutely know is going to, you know, completely defy expectations and outperform their ADP, it's a risk. And I would advise people, especially if you're not really, you know, a savvy drafter, right? Don't do that. So that's what I tell people. You know, if you're going to draft a quarterback early, great. Just don't draft a tight end early as well, because you're going to wind up shooting yourself in the foot.
I like that. I haven't heard that yet from anybody. So that's a good one. I really like that one. So speaking of quarterbacks, I kind of want to segue, and this is actually in best balls lately. This has been a stack that I've been messing with lately, is your QB one, I guess, is he's going to be Sam Darnold with Robbie Anderson kind of later on. I've been playing with that one, because how do you feel about what's going on with your QB situation right now?
Well, I mean, as far as Carolina is concerned, I mean, the quarterback situation in Carolina, it's all about potential. It really is. And you know, Carolina uses a horizontal attacking, shallow cross type of offense where deep throws and stretching the field, that's not a common occurrence in Carolina's offense, Joe Brady's offense. And I mean, if you look back at last year, this is one of the reasons why Teddy Bridgewater had such a high completion percentage. It was 69%, like second or third in the league, is because they're doing lots of shallow crosses, right? And more often than not, you see like a shallow to intermediate type of pass where you're going to have a higher completion percentage. And that's what helped Carolina. Now, granted, they lost McCaffrey. He only played three games. But, they still employed that particular type of offense. And I think that's going to help Sam Darnold. Not only that, but I also think that Sam Darnold is going through a confidence booster as well. And it's amazing what confidence can do for a quarterback. If we can look at Sam Darnold with the Jets and think, you know, going back to his rookie year, I'm not sure he was really ready to start, even though he was such a high draft pick. I'm not sure he was quite ready, and he was kind of forced into that, and the coaching situation and staff wasn't that great. His supporting cast wasn't that good, you know, his complimentary receivers and such. Just not really great for a rookie quarterback coming in. And remember he had that seeing ghosts thing, you know, where that kind of got out, and the New York media didn't help, you know. And Darnold's only 20, I think he just turned 24. He's only 24 years old, and so he still has opportunity and time to better himself. How many times have we seen a quarterback kind of start off a little bit rough, rusty, and then eventually they get better, right? And that was either they moved to a different team. We saw this with Ryan Tannehill. In fact, it's associated with Adam Gase as well.
Right.
You move on from another team, and you do well. And I think we could see that from Sam Darnold. I'm not expecting it, but I think it's it's something that is definitely possible and plausible to see from Darnold. I just think that the confidence is going to really help and improve him. Here's a coaching staff that handpicked him. He is now in a completely different city, different media, different team, different coaching staff, different players, and he's got that opportunity. What concerns me most, I guess, is the offensive line. Is that offensive line going to be good enough to stand up to, protect him and, open holes for McCaffrey, be able to withstand the defensive pressure from the NFC South, which is kind of strong. So, it's all about potential. There's definitely potential there. As far as fantasy speaking, Darnold's like a mid-20s guy, mid-20s in terms of quarterbacks off the board. I think he probably will exceed his expectations in terms of his draft ADP, but we need to see it happen first. And if it doesn't happen, if it doesn't work for Darnold this year, I'm not sure if it ever will, because this is his make or break year, kind of like Daniel Jones, same thing, kind of like Tua Tagovailoa, right? Kind of the same thing. They have opportunities, and now it's up to them to come forth, and we're going to find out real quick if Darnold is the right man for the job.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that like 1,000%. I mean, I don't feel like he was ever given a fair shake, really, with what was taking place. I mean, Adam Gase he's terrible at coaching. I mean, it's been proven just in multiple locations, right? He's just not any good at it. And so I think this is a phenomenal situation for Darnold as well. I don't think he could have found many better positions, actually. I mean, it's an up-and-coming coach who has a good system that I think is going to fit him. And this is easily the best wide receiver crew he's played with. And the best back he's had around him. So, and he's used to playing with a crap offensive line. So I'm not sure that will really bother him all that much, but I'm kind of excited to see it happen. Cause I do think there was part of me that was almost hoping that he would get left so much in the dirt after the Jets that he might be like the Bills backup quarterback, because I don't think that he's terrible. And he's young. I mean, and he was a really high pick, and he played it, you know, at USC, he played in a completely different system, what they're asking him to do, you know, in New York. And I think what he's going to do now is going to fit him a lot better. So I'm kind of interested to see how it pans out. I think it's going to be a real good season for him, actually. So the other main piece, though, obviously, is it's the man behind him, right? I mean, so CMC is going to be back. Do you think we're going to see CMC, or is there going to be a little drop off? What's your anticipation with him?
I don't have any doubts whatsoever about McCaffrey. I mean, he in three games that he did play, he gained over 370 yards. He had 17 receptions, and he had 6 touchdowns in those three games. And all of them were losses. All of them were Carolina losses. There was a narrow loss to the Raiders, which resulted. It all came from a – and, in fact, this was the first game of the year a failed fourth down conversion late in the game that Carolina was driving to take the lead with a field goal, and they couldn't get that fourth down conversion. It was like fourth and one, and they were short. It was horrible. They lost to Tampa Bay on a second half turnover that just kind of unraveled. And then they lost to Kansas City on the road by missing a game-winning field goal. So those are all the three games that McCaffrey played. All three games were losses, but all three games could have been winners. And they get McCaffrey back. Now, Carolina was 27th in the NFL and touchdown percentage in the red zone. So that's something that needs to improve, and getting McCaffrey back hopefully will help that. Plus, that also wasn't necessarily Teddy Bridgewater's strength. And we're kind of hoping that, as far as Carolina faithful, we're hoping that Darnold might be able to improve on that.
Yeah. What's your take on the back that you drafted, Chuba Hubbard?
Chuba Hubbard?
Have you heard anything coming out of camp or anything about him? What are you thinking?
Nothing quite yet, other than just the fact that everyone's really excited about it. I don't know if you recall the story about Matt Rhule's wife telling Matt that don't you come home unless you draft Chuba Hubbard here, right? Because it was their pick to take him, and that's a true story. His wife actually said, you know, draft Chuba Hubbard. Because,
no,
you know, they came from Baylor, so they're familiar with his ability in college. And what was it, 2019? He had 2,000 yards rushing and 22 touchdowns, something like that. I mean, he was one of the top running backs in college. And then 2020 happened. He had kind of a little bit of a letdown, and then he opted out as a result. And he's just kind of going into the draft with that 2019 resume. So I'm a little concerned there, but the fact that he was able to do that, that's strong. And any running back in Carolina's system, I think, is someone that you should be aware of fantasy-wise. I mean, look at Mike Davis last year. Mike Davis right. turned into the go-to running back for Atlanta as a result of what he was able to do when McCaffrey right. was out. So any running back in Carolina's offense is going to succeed. You know, obviously McCaffrey is the top guy, but if he were to miss time, I think Chuba Hubbard would come in and be a exciting type of replacement back that I think we can count on in terms of fantasy production.
Well, and of course he gets to learn from one of the best guys in the league too, right? I mean, if you get to hang out with a dude that's just absolutely awesome at it all the time, I think your level is naturally just going to increase, right?
And his work ethic and everything associated with that, conditioning, all of that, right? Exactly.
Right. So we've got all that. You're getting CMC back. It's going to be a new look offense. There's a lot going on in the rest of the division. Where do you think you guys stand in the division?
Well, I mean, in NFC South, I think it's all about the Bucs. they returned everybody. Of course, Tom Brady's there. I mean, Tom Brady has participated in 18.5% of all Super Bowls ever played. Think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. So, there's a 50% chance that he reaches the Super Bowl just based off of his 20 years of experience in 10 Super Bowls. So there's a good chance that Tampa's going to represent the NFC again. I think it's the Bucs. And then maybe you put New Orleans second. But, you know, they have their own hurdles without Breeze. They've got to come over and, discover what it's going to be like to win games without Breeze. It's not a walk in the park for the Saints either. And then I think it's Atlanta and Carolina. I also think that, defense is going to have to come into play here. Which defense is going to stand out of New Orleans, Carolina, and Atlanta, whichever of the three teams has the better defense, I think is the team that's going to take second in the division behind Tampa Bay. And unless something completely just derails with the Buccaneers, I think that's how it's going to go down.
Yeah, I mean, I have you guys three. I think Atlanta's going to come in last again, just because they did not address their defense. And, and then they traded away like one of the greatest wide receivers in the league. But, yeah, I mean, you don't need him, so it's no big deal. But I actually think that I like what's going on in Carolina. You know, I think it is on the up and up right now. I think it's trending in the right direction, at least after the first year under Rhule. It feels like it's trending in the right direction, and I think your defense is clearly better than what Atlanta is probably going to put out there. New Orleans, I'm curious to see what really happens with them, because I do have a little faith in what they could pull off, just because their defense was good and they do have good offensive weapons, right? And Sean Payton's a good football coach, so I'm curious to see what happens with them. But Tampa bringing everybody back, I mean, it makes it difficult. And it's fun to actually, and I feel bad saying this to you almost, but it's fun to listen to somebody else have to feel the torment of having Tom Brady in your division. So it almost feels helpless, like when you're coming into the season.
Oh,
it's like,
yes.
Yep, Tom's still here. Yeah. Okay, so next year maybe. Like, it's fun. But
the whole
it's very cool.
Is waiting for him to retire.
Absolutely. Everybody is. So if you could just pick like one player in the league that you think is going to have like kind of like a breakout season or something this year, who do you think it would be?
Wow, a breakout year? Well, I told you, the guy that I love the most is Ridley. So I'm big on him. I hate to do a homer pick here, but I really like Terrace Marshall with Carolina. I think that we're going to be pleasantly surprised. I mean, the only downside for him is his foot ankle injuries that he kind of suffered in college. That was one of the reasons why he fell to the second round. And I mean, he's first round talent, and he comes from wide receiver U at LSU, where we've seen, you know, great receivers come from. And so he has that pedigree. He has that ability. And the thing is with Marshall is we don't really know exactly how good he can be, because we really didn't see too much of him. I mean, he scored 23 touchdowns in the last 19 games. And yeah, some of that was with Joe Burrow, but he also did it this past year with three unknown quarterbacks at LSU who were trying to, you know, find their way onto the field. So and then, of course, he opted out for the rest of the year. But Marshall is a touchdown scorer. And one thing that Carolina does not have is a touchdown scorer as far as a wide receiver. You've got DJ Moore, who has played 3 years in the league. He's got 10 touchdowns in 3 years. Never had more than 4 touchdowns in a season. Robbie Anderson, he had 11 touchdowns with the Jets, you know, and with Carolina, that wasn't necessarily the case. They scored a lot of rushing touchdowns last year, Carolina did. And with McCaffrey on board as well, you know, he's getting a lot of those touches in the goal line too. But Marshall, I think, is someone who could very, very quietly surprise and be a leader in touchdowns for the Panthers wide receiver core. So I like Marshall, and I think he's someone actually who could potentially overtake Robbie Anderson's role. And that may not happen until next year because Anderson's a free agent, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see Marshall, if he picks things up well and he, you know, kind of takes over where he left off with Joe Brady and LSU. If that goes well, I think we're going to start to see him see a little bit more of the field. But it's early. It's still very early. I just like his ability. And in this shallow cross, horizontal attacking offense that Carolina has, he's a perfect fit.
I did not know that that DJ Moore stat of only 10 touchdowns over the 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, DJ Moore does everything well. He does everything well except score touchdowns.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Only Calvin Ridley and Stephon Diggs had more games of 90 yards receiving last year than DJ Moore.
Because I felt when you said, I feel like he's always up there in the fantasy points and everything. So it was weird when you said it was only 10 touchdowns. I was like, oh, really? Because it feels like he's always up there.
If he has like 7-8 touchdowns in a year, which isn't, you know, that's not like considered elite wide receiver. He's up into that lower wide receiver one type of territory. That's the type of category that he would be in right now if he would score touchdowns. He's just not. And for whatever reason, you know, I mean, he's last year he had his highest yards per catch at 18.1, something like that. So, I mean, he does really well after the catch, and that's one of the reasons why it's so high. But for whatever reason, he's just not getting in the end zone. And I think a lot of that also has to do with McCaffrey. But, you know, take it for what you want. That's what's holding DJ Moore back.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, McCaffrey, when he's scoring all the touchdowns. I mean, you're giving it to him at the 35-yard line, he's running it in. You're giving him at the 10-yard line, he's running it in. I mean, he's so good. I agree. It's interesting. So last season we had a guy, I would say, that had a breakout season in Josh Allen, right, in Buffalo. So do you think that there's a lot of people right now that are like, he can't do it again, right? He's gonna drop back. What are your thoughts on Josh Allen this season? Do you think he can repeat that?
Oh, yeah. I think he could be the top quarterback in the league, even ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the reason why is because he's got a dual threat ability, and that's what makes him one of the better fantasy quarterbacks in the league. Not only can he run, but he can also pass, and he passes well, and he can pass for distance. So, I mean, his air yards is up there. And for his ability to run in addition to all of that and have a elite wide receiver on the team, that says a lot. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely a strong possibility that he could end up in the top three, if not the top quarterback in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to have it all together so far. And, I mean, not much changed with the Bills either, really. I mean, they brought most of the pieces back, lost John Brown, brought in Emmanuel Sanders. I think it's a very similar team, right? So he should be very comfortable in the situation. Stephon Diggs, I don't see him really slowing down this season. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Cole Beasley in this offseason stuff. And then, you know, who do you like behind Stephon Diggs, right? Because he's pretty pricey, and he's the stud, right? So a lot of people go after him. Is there a Bills wide receiver behind him that you would say, yeah, I'm going to latch onto that guy?
You've got Beasley. Cole Beasley is someone who is a very interesting possibility late in drafts. I mean, you can have him as your fifth receiver and probably do pretty well with that. So, I mean, the value is there. Now, the question, though, is he's talked about retirement and this and that. And, what's Gabriel Davis going to do? I mean, that's not necessarily his role. Beasley has that role. And then, what is it, Isaiah McKenzie, who could potentially come in and, you know, kind of steal some thunder there. But it's, for the most part, it's Diggs. And I see Diggs as someone who's a candidate for the number one wide receiver role, because there's not really that second wide receiver who is going to, you know, have a tremendous target share with Diggs. I think Diggs is by far the clear top target, the clear top receiver on the team, and that includes running backs, tight ends, receivers, everything. So whenever you have a player like that, there's a real strong ability or a strong case for that player to finish as the wide receiver one overall in terms of fantasy. Out of the last 5 years, that's happened four out of the last five, where a wide receiver, the wide receiver one has had like virtually zero competition from the next closest wide receiver on the team. And I kind of see that with Diggs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I saw earlier somebody put out a stat that, you know, against man, he was, you know, the per routes run, he had the most catches and the most yards, you know, against man. And when we're putting four wide receivers out there, he's going to see so much man that it's like it's hard to not see him being able to repeat that. Now, maybe the catches might not be the same, but I feel like the yards are still going to be there. And I feel like the touchdowns are still going to be there for him this year as well. This offense, I mean, unless it has like a major, major, like just fall apart, I see like a very similar thing happening again this year, right? Like the numbers might not be exactly the same, but I think they're going to be pretty darn close.
Yeah.
So what do you think about, did the Bills win the division again this year? Or do you think that, you know, New England bringing back their defense and, you know, going spending a ton of money, bringing in probably two of the better tight ends in the league? You know, yeah. You got Miami. I really like Brian Flores. I think he's a good coach, and I do feel they're trending in the right direction. But what do you think?
I think Buffalo has it. I don't want to say they're wrapped up, but I think they're the odds-on favorite to win the division. Miami being a close second, and not to forget about New England as well. But, I think Buffalo probably wins 13, 14 games, they take the division. So I'm on their side.
Yeah, I think you have to be, because you're Carolina. So, you know, there's the whole Carolina to Buffalo. Every time somebody leaves Carolina, they have to go to Buffalo, basically, it feels like.
Yeah.
They pick them up every time.
I grew up a Bills fan, too. I grew up in Western New York, and I used to have season tickets to the Bills way back.
Excellent.
So
really, I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm a big fan. I've been to their training camp in Fredonia, as well as in St. John Fisher, a couple times. So, growing up in Rochester, I was okay. Always a big Bills fan.
Yeah, so I grew up in Fillmore, you know, not too far from you there in Rochester, is about an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Very cool. So let me ask you overall then. So the Bills are going to win the division. This AFC is stacked, I think. You know, I think it's incredible how many good teams are going to potentially be up there again this year. Where do you think the Bills stand in the overall in the AFC? Are they going to be back in the AFC championship? Do you think they've done enough to potentially get Kansas City, or is this still Kansas City's show?
And it's possible. If Buffalo can get a home game, you never know. Kansas City, you beat Kansas City on the road. That's where you can do it. I would say Kansas City is their top target in terms of competition. You can look at the Titans or the Colts or someone like that who could potentially be a thorn in their side. Baltimore even possibly, right? But I think Kansas City is the team to beat, and Kansas City is probably saying the same about Buffalo. So they're right there. They're like neck and neck. They're 1A and 1B, I think, in the AFC.
Yeah, where do you have Cleveland?
I actually like Cleveland. I think Cleveland's going to take the division in a tight battle. I like Cleveland. I'm not sure if they're, I don't know if they're hugely popular in terms of a playoff, favorite, but they're a team to watch for sure. They don't quite have that experience capital that say the Chiefs have, and even Buffalo is starting to have. So they're a little bit young in that regard. But they're on their way. They're moving. So Cleveland is one to watch out for. I do think that Cleveland's going to win the division over Baltimore, and I think Pittsburgh's going to. Fall off. I think they actually could be a surprise team that we're like, what happened to Pittsburgh? So that's my take as far as the AFC and where Cleveland fits in the mix.
Yeah, that's me 100%. I agree with that completely. Baltimore lost too many defensive pieces for me. Cleveland is getting defensive pieces, which they needed. And yeah, I agree. Pittsburgh, they're done. I feel like they're just done. I feel like they're going to be finishing fourth in the division this year.
It's possible.
I'm not surprised.
Everyone probably thinks, well, Mike Tomlin will put it together. He always does, right? But at some point, you don't. The tide has to turn, and I think that's kind of happening with Pittsburgh, despite the fact that they've got some great players on that team.
Right.
They probably have a bottom five offensive line. Ben Roethlisberger's getting older. If he has to miss games, good luck. And that also means that the receiving corps is going to take a hit. So, Najee Harris is good. He's a good running back. But, we'll see what he does in the NFL. We'll see what he does behind that offensive line. And with the new offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, we don't know what we're going to see. And just the only thought I have is Ben Roethlisberger sitting on that bench, kind of moping and wallowing in his own self-pity. That's kind of what's in my head right now. It looked like that was his last game. He's going to retire. He's done. All right. We'll see you. We'll see you again for your gold jacket. And that's it. Thanks, Ben.
Right. Have you seen the photo floating around already of him after practice? He's like all iced up on the shoulder. Both knees are iced up. It doesn't look good. Nothing looks promising about having your quarterback ice up during walkthroughs and barely running around and stuff. Right.
No,
it's tough.
Good luck, 17 games.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of okay with it because I like the transition that's kind of taking place, right? We're seeing some new teams up at the top, and it's making the NFL fun again, and it's not just the same old Pittsburgh and New England and all this kind of nonsense, so I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. All right, let's head over into the nerding out session. I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit off of football, even though your answers are football and we're asking some football questions. But the first thing I wanted to ask you, Jeff, is do you have like a sports book that you would recommend that you've read that you were like, hey, this is a very cool book, anything like that?
All right, so I'm actually kind of glad you asked me that because there's a guy on the Football Guy staff. His name is Jeff Tiefertiller, and his son is, what is he now, 15? His son, and he's writing his second book on fantasy football predictive analytics, and he's only 15.
That's awesome.
It's a great book. It's a wonderful book, and he asked me to review it and also write a foreword for it. That's coming. So that's definitely something you want to check out. It's called Fantasy Football Predictive Analytics. You'll be able to get it on Amazon and everything. I'm sure it'll make its way around Twitter, and I'll promote it. But that's a book that it's a great fantasy book, and it was written by a 15-year-old. I almost don't want to say that because it's so good, it's definitely something to read. And if you like analytics, you like stats, data, information, tables, it's outstanding. So it's kind of like his perspective of the 2021 fantasy season, what he likes in terms of strategies, the players that he likes and why, and it's all kind of data contrived. So check that out. That's coming. Fantasy Football Predictive Analytics by Reese Tiefertiller.
That's awesome. Very cool. That's one of the better suggestions I've heard so far. Awesome. I like yeah, that.
You should have him on your show. The kid is smart. I mean, I remember when he was 7 years old and he's spitting out these Super Bowl trivia questions. I'm like, how do you know this? You know? So he takes like his dad. He's going to be in the fantasy industry. I have a feeling, you know, just kind of writing, even if it's just part time doing stuff. I can totally see him, you know, being in that corner of the world.
That's awesome, especially at that age. It's cool, and that's what the cool thing about fantasy, right? It's so in front of everybody now, and everybody knows how much they love it, and you can do so much with it. You can look at it from so many different angles and, like, you know, try to find different things. So it's very cool, and I would definitely have to check that one out when it comes out. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, what do you love about football, Jeff? Like, what brought you to it? What made you want to be like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do every day. I'm going to start just writing about football, talking about it.
For me, it's just, I mean, football, I love football. It's a total team sport, so I enjoy that. But, I mean, as far as the live aspect of the game, you just never know what's going to happen. You know, you could have a play become a moment that is just forever remembered. You know, like the Stephon Diggs miracle touchdown in Minneapolis against the Saints. I mean, you name it. The Santonio Holmes catch in the Super Bowl. Whatever it might be, there's always something, and almost like weekly we see it, and it seems like games always come down to the end, you know, or we have overtime games, or a game is decided in the fourth quarter, whoever's the last team with the ball. Seems like Monday night games we see that all the time, or any like Sunday night game, you know, you're getting a good matchup and you've got a great audience for this game, and now that we're going to have fans back in the stands, it's going to be even better.
Absolutely.
So yeah, in my opinion, it's just that I feel this way with sports in general, but with football, I just love football. You just never know what's going to happen. And that's what keeps me excited and coming back for more. It's like, okay, I want more. I want more of that. And that's what makes me, you know, an excited fan in terms of, you know, wanting to watch all the time. I'll watch the Sunday night game. I'll watch the Monday night game. I'll watch as many Sunday day games as I can. You know, it's just, it's fun. I enjoy it. And then you throw the fantasy side into that, and it just makes it even that much more enjoyable watching the games.
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible what the game can do. And just like, even if you're like having a bad day or whatever, it's fun to just sit down and catch a game, and there's always going to be something exciting happening. You're going to see an incredible play. Somebody's going to do something really cool, you know, or just make an amazing, amazing throw, catch, whatever it may be. So awesome. So besides the Carolina Fandom podcast, do you have a favorite podcast?
I mean, probably my old standby, The Audible, which is a Football Guys podcast with Sigmund Bloom, Cecil Lammy, Matt Waldman, Gene Bramall. I mean, they do a great job of breaking stuff down, sharing their opinions, which are so valuable. And it's great to listen to Sigmund, great to listen to Matt Waldman talk. I mean, I could listen to them talk about football all day long. And then you throw Gene Bramall in there, giving us the updates on injuries and such. So The Audible is just, it's my mainstay. It's what I grew up with in terms of this industry. And, you know, of course, it helps to know the guys who are doing it as well. So they're good guys. You know, I've met them several times. I enjoy working with them, and I enjoy listening to their podcast. So if you haven't checked out The Audible, you should do so.
Absolutely. I've definitely heard it a few times. It's a good one. So, Jeff, you got one moment in football history or in player, anything that just sticks with you when you just think about it, you can't get rid of it every time. It's just like, man.
I don't know, man. Maybe like the tuck rule game. Because if you think about the tuck rule game, first of all, when that happened and, you know, that snowy game, you know, New England and the Raiders, so it was a wild card game, I think, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it comes down to that play, which totally looked like a fumble. And, you know, the Raiders would have won the game. They would have gone on to play Pittsburgh the next week because Pittsburgh was the number one seed. They probably don't win that game, right? Even if they do win that game, then they're going to probably have to face the Rams, who were 14-2 that year. They outscored their opponents by 14 points each game. So, yeah, they're probably not winning that game. But, I mean, if it wasn't for the tuck rule, do we have the same level of of interest and dynasty value of Brady and Bill Belichick? You know, I don't know. I mean, you could probably say, yeah, they're still going to do what they do and you know, everything. But, I mean, there's the slight possibility that maybe they don't, you know, if they don't win that game. Right. So that kind of started the Patriots dynasty. And I don't think it was fair. I still don't agree with that Tuck Rule game. I just don't. And but whatever. You know, I put me on the side of the Raiders here. But, yeah, I think that was a fumble. I think the Raiders win that game. And, you know, Tom Brady doesn't have his – start to his wonderful career.
Right. No, and I think there's a ton of people that agree with you on that one. So before we get ready to head out of here, Jeff, is there anything that you want to shout out? Anything that you're working on? Anything you got coming up? Anything that you want to kind of throw out there?
Well, I mean, I've got some articles on Football Guys about Calvin Ridley, how we think he can be the number one wide receiver, Antonio Gibson, who I really like this year. DJ Moore, got an article coming out on DJ Moore, which I'm just kind of finishing up. So that's coming. Of course, I do lots of other things on Football Guys with the collaborative pieces with staff. So check that out as well. My rankings are there. Just everything, really, associated with the site. So check that out. Check out footballguys.com. For Carolina fans, I've got my Carolina Fandom podcast coming up. We're talking about the Charlotte MLS team that is taking center stage in 2022. So people who, if you like soccer and you're in the area, you like Carolina, listen. And, you know, I'm excited to have some great people on to talk about that. And looking forward to that. So, yeah, there's a little plug in for my local podcast.
Love it. Awesome. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for hanging out with me today, man. I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. Everybody listening in, thanks a lot. Wouldn't be having a show without you guys. So, you know, make sure you're sharing it around. Everything that I'm up to, you guys can find over at thebuffalonerd.com. So just head over there. All the shows, you know, we've had some awesome guests on, including Jeff tonight. So you guys need to go check all that stuff out. Be safe out there. Let's get ready to have an awesome season, guys. See you next week.
Podcast. Make sure you leave a review and subscribe so you never miss another episode. We'll see you next time. Leg out.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.